We often think of child labor as no longer being an issue in the United States, but in fact, minors are still regularly employed in one of our least safe industries, agriculture. The Nation magazine has conducted a special investigation into child labor in America, and we're joined now by Gabriel Thompson, whose article, Leaves of Poison, explores the dangers minors and adults face in tobacco fields. Also with us is Maria Strauss, whose article, Dying on the Farm, examines the legal and personal complications of child labor on America's farms. Their articles appear in the December 2nd issue of The Nation. I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Gabriel, you're right. A tobacco grower who hires a 12-year-old to work 70-hour weeks in the summer is well within the letter of the law. How is that legal? Don't we have some pretty stringent child labor laws on the books?
Well, there's two kinds of child labor laws. There's child labor laws that cover all work outside of agriculture, and then there's special rules for child labor in agriculture. And while there are plenty of, in almost every instance, the rules that pertain to farm work are watered down. So if you're a kid working in McDonald's, let's say, there are limits to how many hours you can work on a school day, how many hours you can work in a week, et cetera. If you're and the purpose of that is obvious, you know, so it doesn't interfere with your schooling and the things that will really, you know, hopefully get you ahead in your life. But in the fields, the only limitation is that you can't be working while school is in session. And so, in fact, it's quite common. You know, I spent some time in North Carolina where the tobacco harvest is based. It's quite common for kids to work 10, 11, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week during the summer working in tobacco.
Well,
and go ahead.
Why did the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 exempt agricultural and domestic workers? Was there a racial component to that decision?
Yeah, and it was a pretty overt one. I think the main fear among Southerners was that any sort of legislation that you know enshrined the same rights, so the same rights to form unions, all the rights that go along with those pieces of legislation, if they applied to everyone, then everyone would be on equal footing, and that would be potentially socially dangerous to have. You know, African Americans made up the bulk of the domestic workers and farm workers, and those were the two industries that were excluded from a number of these protections. So it was a way to talk about and to limit the rights of people of African Americans without actually being overtly saying it was race-based, but in fact it was.
Maria, I'm assuming now it's mostly immigrant children, but do we have any sense of how common it is?
Well, the best estimates we have come from researchers at places like Human Rights Watch and other workers' rights advocacy groups. They estimate that there are probably between 200,000 and 400,000 kids as young as 12, but between 12 and 16 years old, working in agriculture in the United States.
And what kinds of farm work are these miners doing? Are they operating heavy machinery or just working the fields?
They're doing whatever it takes to get the harvest in. So if that means driving a tractor, they're driving tractors. If it means feeding livestock, they're feeding livestock. If it means pulling tobacco, working inside of grain silos, working with manure pits, giant in-ground vats of liquid manure, they're doing all of that.
And Gabriel said that they do it during the summer months when they're out of school, but should I assume that they also work the rest of the year?
Yeah. There are some regulations governing the kinds of hours that kids can work while school is in session. I have heard of cases anecdotally where employers in agriculture find ways to get around those rules, but for the most part, you know, but after school, even during while school is in session, kids are legally working in the fields from, you know, whenever school gets out, 3 p.m., 4 p.m. until dark, and even sometimes after dark.
I'm talking with Maria Strauss and Gabriel Thompson. Their special investigation into children working in America's tobacco fields was the cover story in The Nation. the December 2nd issue. Gabriel, you open your article with a look at the Coelho sisters in North Carolina. Why did the three sisters go and work in the tobacco fields? How old were they when they started?
So they were from 12 to 14, so 12, 13, and 14-year-olds. And it's an important point, which is that you have to look at child labor in the fields in the context of field work generally. You know, the reason that kids, besides that it's legal, but the reason that there are so many kids still working in the fields is that farm workers are paid extremely low wages. And so you have what essentially becomes a family wage. The reason those three sisters are working in the fields is that their mom was single, was raising them as a single mother at the time. That money went to pay for school supplies, for rent, for electricity. So the reason they're out there typically is economic necessity. When I was in North Carolina reporting on the piece, this family arrived from Florida that was working in tobaccos and was working in tomatoes in Florida, was coming to North Carolina to work in tobacco. And during the drive, their car broke down, and they had to put all their savings into fixing the car. So when they arrived in North Carolina, they had nothing. And they had to take out a big loan from a labor contractor to find housing. And when I met with them, there was virtually no food in the house. And the 14- and 50-year-old girls in this family had just come back from their first day in tobacco. And the mom said, you know, that they basically just have no other option. They need to get back to Florida. And so it's economic distress, you know, that leads parents to have their kids out in the fields with them.
The youngest of the Coelho sisters is 12 years old. Can you work the fields if you're younger than 12?
There are exceptions on small farms that you can be 10, but typically most of the kids that I was looking at are working for, you know, they're not working for family farms. They're contract workers working for, when you're picking tobacco in North Carolina, you have a farmer or a contractor you're working for who works with a farmer who then sells his leaves to, you know, one, the big tobacco companies. So typically this is sort of corporate farming, not your the family farm.
Mario, young farm workers face a workplace fatality rate four times that of children in other industries. What kinds of hazards do they face on the job?
Well, as Gabriel mentioned, it's a range of things, partly because they are working out in the elements, and so there are all of the hazards that come along with working outdoors. One of the updates that was proposed to further protect them would have protected kids from working in extreme heat conditions, and that heat stress in the fields is certainly a major hazard. Kids' bodies are smaller. They haven't developed as much as an adult body, and the impact of heat stress can be different and faster acting on them. So heat stress is a big one. Another big one is driving tractors. Again, these numbers are not tracked. There's no federal or other agency that's tasked with systematically collecting the numbers of injuries and illnesses and fatalities specifically for this age group of farm workers. But we do know that tractors are one of the most extremely hazardous things that these kids work with. And so you do see kids as young as 12, certainly driving tractors, driving heavy machinery. If they're not at the wheel, they're often passengers on these tractors and unfortunately susceptible to falling off or having the tractor roll over on top of them.
The Department of Labor's hazard list for farm work hasn't been updated since 1970. Mm-hmm. Has farm work changed much since then?
It has changed some. If you think it's about 43 years, there's been some greater mechanization on the farm. Certainly vehicles, the types of vehicles that these kids are driving are more ubiquitous now. Farms are often bigger. Agricultural operations can be very large. If you think in terms of industrialized farming, where many of these kids do work with their parents or just on their own out in the fields. And so I do think, you know, there is evidence that some things about farming have changed, but others have not. And it's simply that some of the documented cases where we do have evidence of kids getting hurt and injured and killed have led the government to say, okay, maybe we need to take another look at these hazardous occupation rules.
Now, Gabriel, are the rules the same whether the teenagers are not members of the family or whether they are just working on their family's farm?
Well, the context of this is the Department of Labor had proposed a whole revision to what's called hazardous orders. The jobs that that workers under 16 are too, they wanted to update to say certain jobs are too dangerous for them to be doing and they can't do those. And so that was pertaining specifically to kids who are working as hired laborers, so not on the family farm. One thing I think is important is not only has farm work changed, but our knowledge has changed. So back in 1970, something like acute nicotine poisoning, which is what I document in my piece, in which kids are ingesting huge amounts of nicotine from the leaves, from wet leaves, into their bloodstreams and getting quite sick. That was hardly documented at all. Our knowledge of pesticides, the effect of pesticides on both kids and adults was very limited. And so one of the updates to the hazardous orders as well was to prohibit kids from working with pesticides that were associated with chronic long-term problems. So it's not just that farm has changed, but that we've learned a lot more about what sort of hazards the work can have.
You note that on a humid day, a tobacco worker in North Carolina can be exposed to the nicotine equivalent of 36 cigarettes. I'm assuming that will have more of an impact on a young person's body, and that leads to nicotine poisoning. How would you describe what happens with nicotine poisoning?
Well, it's sort of like the flu on steroids. Sometimes you start vomiting, you have diarrhea, you're dizzy. One worker told me that she has hallucinations. Sometimes you have to go to hospitalized because you can have really slow heart rates and really low blood pressure. And it takes about, it usually lasts, 2, 3, 4 days. People are in immense pain. A 13-year-old described it to me as feeling like he was going to die. And that's actually exactly how another adult tobacco farmer described it. So it's very intense, and it's not uncommon. As an illness, it hasn't been tracked much. These are farm workers working in tobacco fields. I'm sure if these sorts of conditions were happening to people working on laptops or lawyers, it would be a front page story in the Times. But they're generally happening. I want to say that it's quite common. The studies put in a typical season, 1 out of 4 tobacco workers will come down with what's called green tobacco sickness or acute nicotine poisoning.
Wasn't one tobacco grower allegedly encouraging his employees to take up smoking as a way to build up immunity to nicotine exposure in the fields?
Yeah, that was actually, it's actually more than one. The Wake Forest School of Medicine surveyed farmers about their knowledge of the issue. And farmers generally dismissed it. And I spoke to farmers who dismissed it as well. And one of the means that they thought would build up tolerance, which is true, actually, it looks like, is that if you start smoking, you're less susceptible to that. Of course, that's from a public health perspective, that's a total nightmare. But it's also, I think, important to note that when you get in the field, I worked a day in the tobacco fields just to kind of see what it was like. And there are all these things you can do. You can provide people gloves or jackets or tell them not to work in wet fields. But when you actually get out there, there's no oversight. I mean, no one, the contractor just put me out there, didn't mention anything about nicotine. None of the workers practically I spoke to knew about the potential hazards. And if they described that they were getting sick, they had all these theories about it, what it was. But there's very little, I think, being done on the ground to protect workers from this sort of occupational hazard.
My guests are Gabriel Thompson, whose article Leaves of Poison explores the dangers minors and adults face in tobacco fields, and Maria Strauss, whose article Dying on the Farm examines the legal and personal complications of child labor on America's farms. They are the cover stories of the December 2nd issue of The Nation, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Gabriel Thompson. His article, Leaves of Poison, Why Are Children Working in America's Tobacco Fields? And Maria Strauss, her article, Dying on the Farm, are the cover stories of the December 12th issue of The Nation. Now, hasn't working in tobacco fields, at least children working in tobacco fields, been banned in many countries?
Yeah, it's been banned in Russia and Kazakhstan to anyone under 18. And the U.S. actually has been a force to try to get kids out of tobacco fields around the world. I think they've spent several million dollars to try to eradicate the child tobacco labor issue in the African country of Malawi.
Everywhere but in the United States.
Well, yeah, except that, in 2011, the Department of Labor issued these new rules that they were proposing, new protections for young farm workers. And among those new rules was a ban on all work related to tobacco. And so there was an attempt. What happened, if I can tell that story, I think it's important, is that there was a big pushback by the American Farm Bureau, other agricultural trade groups, who eventually made the issue to be about family farms, that this would impact family farms, although it was specifically written to be only dealing with hired young farm workers.
Now, didn't Sarah Palin get involved? And then the House Republican, Republican Congressman Denny Rehberg, who's also a multimillionaire rancher, he claimed that a five-year-old could safely run his entire operation.
But it was a total circus, yeah. Sarah Palin went to Facebook and posted something that was not true, and it got a million likes, and yes, it became a political firestorm. But all that noise was based upon this untruth, which was that this was going to impact this. These rules were written for kids working on their own family farms. And in fact, if you look back at the first child labor legislation, which was finally passed in 1938, it took a while to get that because people made the same arguments that if you let the federal government drop these sorts of rules, they're meddling in family business, and so there was a massive pushback, and eventually, the Secretary of Labor at the time, Hilda Solis, is a real advocate for farm workers. Her dad was a Mexican who actually came to the United States as a farm worker in the guest worker program, but. So she was a big proponent of these rules. But in 2012, the call came from higher than the Department of Labor, probably within the Obama administration. The call came to withdraw entirely all those proposals, including the one that would have banned kids from working in tobacco, which is why it's still perfectly legal for 12-year-olds to work 70-hour days in the summer in tobacco.
Now, Maria, the American Farm Bureau got involved once the administration published its proposed regulations.
Mm-hmm.
What makes up the American Farm Bureau? Is this are we talking about farmers, or are we talking about Monsanto, DuPont, mm-hmm. Archer, Daniel Midland, and the like?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's both. The American Farm Bureau, it's the American Farm Bureau Federation, is the full name, and they are kind of a loosely affiliated national federation of farm. They serve as the farm lobby in Washington, D.C. It is largely composed, I think, of the larger growers, and that includes, big agribusiness firms, as well as some smaller family farms. They also provide insurance to farmers, and that's another way that some of the smaller farm operations get involved with them.
Now, why would they be concerned about tobacco farmers? Only a small portion of them, I assume, are in tobacco growing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems evident, and I haven't done a lot of research into the American Farm Bureau itself, but it seems evident that once these rules were proposed, that the Farm Bureau's radar went up, that perhaps their normal way of doing business, which is to hire and put to work 12 to 15-year-old kids in whatever way they wished in order to harvest tobacco and other kinds of crops, was going to be threatened. And so they mobilized a campaign that was really kind of came as a surprise to members of the migrant workers' advocacy community who had really been hoping that these rules could just pass.
Well, usually regulations which protect children are fairly popular. But as Gabriel said, in this case, the campaign was Obama is destroying family farms.
The tagline would be something like Obama wants to ban farm chores. That was actually the title of a widely shared piece, something I'm paraphrasing, but that the types of things that they're proposing to ban were actually not that big a deal, and that farmers and were the best custodians, were the ones who would take care of the farm workers. I think also there's just a looking at the Farm Bureau, they've been doing battle with the EPA for so long over things, and I think it's fair to say that they have an anti-regulatory agenda. This sort of fits into that. I'm not sure that people felt like there was going to be a huge economic impact from these rules, because these rules again were banning very specific tasks, saying that it wasn't that 12-year-olds can't work in the fields anymore. It's that 12-year-olds can't work with a certain class of pesticide, or 12 workers can't work 20 feet high on an elevated platform 20 feet high. So they're very specific tasks, but that it fit into an anti-regulatory agenda where, if the Department of Labor is able to propose this and it flies by and no one makes a fuss, what might be next?
And now the Obama administration has declared that it won't pursue new regulations for the rest of the time it's in office. Are they that afraid of the farm lobby?
That was a really interesting press release that they issued when they withdrew the proposal, because it said the language is like, to be clear, we will not pursue this for the rest of our time in office. It really left no room for future maneuvering. I think one thing to point out is that the proposal that the Department of Labor made, which was based on recommendations largely from a group called NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, which is an arm of the Centers for Disease Control, it was a big proposal, many pages long. And so I think there was room for, when those rules were proposed, for comments and for fine-tuning and for listening to certain concerns that inevitably were cropping up. So I think there was room to make an adjustment, but what the Obama administration did instead was totally pull back and say, we're not doing this anymore. And that, as one advocate told me, that was like a sucker punch in the gut that no one saw coming.
Maria, you report that the Iowa Occupational Safety and Health Administration performed just 31 inspections on 92,000 farms in 2011. Is there essentially no oversight of our farms, or is Iowa particularly bad?
Well, I mean, I think Iowa could be seen as being particularly bad in that they have 92,000 farms. They have a lot more farms, and perhaps just about the same, or maybe a few more inspectors to go around and try to inspect all of them for safety hazards and violations. And I think what that speaks to is a real lack of funding that is happening to fund safety inspections on farms across the country.
Now, were the farmers and business leaders you spoke to eager to discuss this issue?
No way. There was kind of a real discomfort with discussing anything regarding safety on farms. A few of the people in rural communities that I spoke with were willing to allow that maybe more could be done to protect kids who work on farms. But many people, including in some cases the families of kids who had been injured and killed themselves, told me that they felt that regulations were the wrong way to go.
In fact, one mother told you she was opposed to any new regulation and that she certainly will not be contributing to that nonsense. So were you surprised by those reactions?
Well, I was at first. And then I think as I spoke more with some of the folks who work at NIOSH and in state departments of labor where a lot of the prevention and outreach and training is happening, and there is a lot of outreach and training in rural communities from government agencies and advocacy groups that want to see a reduction in these kinds of injuries and illnesses, these folks are out there. They're training farm workers in the community on how to use pesticides, how to be safer when they're out in heat conditions in the fields and things like this, how to properly use safety equipment. And, you know, really, I think the fact that you have some parents in rural communities of kids who are doing this work who still don't want to see regulation, that really speaks to how far we really have to go in educating folks about what the proposed hazardous orders would do. I think there was a real fear when I talked to some folks in rural communities that their livelihoods might go away.
Well, I'm assuming that many of our listeners are wondering, why would any parent let their child work in a tobacco field? I'm assuming that there are major cultural differences here between the way rural America and urban America looks on issues like child labor and farms.
Well, there's an economic reality too, which is that, you know, if you're making, you know, $10,000 a year and you've got three kids that you're responsible for, and you're going to go off into the fields in the summertime, if you don't have, not only might you need extra money from your child's income, but if you don't have the money to pay for childcare, you know, you're talking about, at least, despite being exposed to pesticides and nicotine poisoning, if the farm worker knows about those problems, at least you're sort of able to keep an eye on your kids. And so it's easy to say, well, why don't they send them, you know, I have my kid in a great preschool in the Upper East Side where they get all sorts of, you know, stimulus and they're reading books and what's with these parents seeing their kids taking them out to the tobacco fields. But it's just and sometimes it can seem like the best of many very bad options.
Now, we have very little time left, but I was wondering, do these workers have any access to health care?
Well, in North Carolina, there were some clinics that folks would go to. But generally not great. And farm workers as well, being written out of some of the federal protections for workers, generally don't get aren't eligible for workers' comp. So many times, too, you'll have...
Well, Gabriel, I have to leave it there, unfortunately.
Okay.
Gabriel Thompson, his article, Leaves of Poison, Why Are Children Working in America's Tobacco Fields? Maria Strauss, her article, Dying on the Farm, both featured in the December 12th issue of The Nation. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.